a couple of weeks ago, I ended my sermon with a question: what if we are divine creativity? And then I dramatically paused and said, to be continued. Well, today it's continued. I had talked about in that sermon the desire to create as a longing for God, a longing for wholeness, a longing for a connection to our deeper selves, a connection to others and to the larger world as far as our minds can take us and even beyond that. Henry Nelson Wyman led me to ask that question, what if we are divine creativity? Wyman was an American philosopher and theologian, and he was Presbyterian, but later he became a Unitarian. So we get to claim him legitimately. His dissertation at Harvard was titled The Organization of Interest. And in it he said that the greatest good for all people could be achieved if the many individual interests could be creatively organized so as to function as a single interest. The creative interest, he says, is to expand our consciousness and understanding. And that reminds me of the Artist Way author Julia Cameron's definition of God, which I also shared 2 weeks ago. God, G-O-D, good, orderly direction. A good, orderly direction toward expansion of our consciousness and understanding. Transformation of our lives, of our thinking. Transformation of our hearts, perhaps. Wow. It sounds like a wonderful personal mission, and maybe not bad for a community mission either. Wyman says that the growth of meaning and value and good exist in the world. The growth of meaning and value and good in the world is creative transformation. And that creative transformation, the creative process, is God. He says there's no distinction between God and creativity. That the creative process, the creative event, is God. Would that change how we thought about God? Whatever God is. What if God is the creative process? What if we are making that happen? What if we are divine creativity? So let's just try to wrap our heads around that, right? So I'm not even sure I can fully grasp it in tangible terms. Or tangible form. But does it mean then that we must create? That we at the very least are co-creators with God? Co-creators of God? Wouldn't it be important then that we create something? That part of our lives, at least part of our lives, are devoted to our own creative process, our own creative genius? What if we are divine creativity? I know where some of the minds went on this, like they go to art and you think, well, I can't paint, I can't write, I can't dance, I can't play an instrument, whatever. The creative process is not specifically focused on creating art, though if that's what you do, then that's your creative process. That is creative process for you. But think about what it feels like, what it has felt like in your life when you have been creative. Maybe when you got an opportunity to sing or to play a beautiful piece of music or some other something, like put flowers in a wall sconce for a worship service or something like that. Think about what that feels like in your body. It feels light. and joyous. And we feel good in our own skin. It's life-affirming and life-sustaining. In her book, Big Magic, Elizabeth Gilbert writes of her friend Susan, who was an ice skater when she was a child, and she gave it up as an adolescent. And then, at some point in her life, she turned 40, which probably to some people in here seems really old. I've been there, I know. So she, at 40, she was listless and restless, and she felt kind of drab and heavy. So she asked herself, when was the last time I felt light and truly joyous and creative in my own skin? And it was when she was figure skating. So she bought herself some skates, and she found a rink, and she hired a coach, and she worked through those self-conscious feelings when she showed up and she was the oldest one in class. But she skated 3 mornings a week, and she still does. She found the joy again. She found the lightness within herself, that lightness of being, the juiciness of being in her body. She didn't quit her job. She didn't sell her home. She didn't sever any relationships or win any championship medals. She just skated. And what skating did was it offered a way for her to unfold a certain beauty and transcendence within her life. Skating is Susan's way to live creatively, her own creative process. Maybe it's where she finds God. Or as Gilbert says, where big magic happens. Creativity is not about the arts necessarily, but it is about the art in us. The art in you, the art that is you. Maybe for you it's gardening or taking pictures or flowers in wall sconces. If it's chopping wood or creating spaces or organizing your spice racks, here's the question. Do you have the courage? I saw somebody organizes their spice racks. Do you have? It's very satisfying, isn't it? Do you have the courage to bring forth the treasures that are hidden within you? Courage to live this creative process, this creative life, to be that creative process means working through our past, our fear of living fully. Sometimes this fear shows up in the body, and sometimes it shows up in the mind. Here are some of the ways that Elizabeth Gilbert gives for why we're afraid to live a creative life. The clock isn't working, so I have to just keep it. This is a long list, and I'm going to cut it. So, you're afraid you have no talent. You're afraid you'll be rejected or criticized or ridiculed or misunderstood or, worst of all, ignored. You're afraid there's no market for your creativity and, therefore, no point in pursuing it. You're afraid somebody else already did it better. You're afraid everybody else already did it better. You're afraid somebody will steal your ideas, so it's safer to keep them hidden forever in the dark. You're afraid you won't be taken seriously. You're afraid your work isn't politically, emotionally, or artistically important enough to change anyone's life. You're afraid your dreams are embarrassing. You're afraid that someday you'll look back on your creative endeavors as having been a giant waste of time, effort, and money. You're afraid you don't have the right kind of discipline. You're afraid you don't have the right kind of workspace or financial freedom or empty hours in which to focus on invention and exploration, or the right kind of training or degree. And here's one that surprised me, but here's what she said about it. You're afraid you're too fat. I don't know what this has to do with creativity, she says. I don't know what this has to do with creativity exactly, but experience has taught me that most of us are afraid we're too fat. So let's just put that on the anxiety list for good measure. You're afraid of being exposed as a hack or a fool or a dilettante or a sham or a narcissist. You're afraid of upsetting your family with what you may reveal. You're afraid of what your peers and coworkers will say if you express your personal truth out loud. You're afraid of unleashing your innermost demons, and you really don't want to unleash your innermost demons or encounter your innermost demons. You're afraid your best work is behind you. You're afraid you never had any best work to begin with. You're afraid you're too old to start. You're afraid you're too young to start. You're afraid because something went well in your life once, so obviously nothing can ever go well again. You're afraid because nothing has ever gone well in your life, so why bother trying? You're afraid of being a one-hit wonder. You're afraid of being a no-hit wonder. Well, you get the idea. It's actually a bottomless list. Fear becomes, even without our knowing it, our inner critic. It leads to defensiveness, and if fear is our inner critic, then defensiveness is our outer critic. Fear we can keep inside ourselves, but our defensiveness comes out from us toward others, and it comes at us from others, and it comes from the systems that we operate in every day. I want to give you some ways in which defensiveness operates and some antidotes to it. It's going to seem like a tangent to creativity, but it isn't, and I promise this is really important. Fear leads to defensiveness. It shows up internally, and it shows up in our individual lives, but especially it shows up in our relationships, in community and in society, because it's about power. And it's about power that we perceive we do or don't have. So I'll just say these things, and you see how they resonate in your body or in your mind if you take it into your intellect first, then see where and how it settles there. But notice if you want to reject some of these ideas right away, if you start to feel defensive, because, you know, that's a thing. So we spend a lot of time and energy trying to prevent abuse of and protect power as it exists rather than trying to facilitate the best out of each person. That's how defensiveness shows up. We spend a lot of time and energy trying to prevent abuse of and to protect power rather than clarifying who has the power and how they're expected to use the power that they have. Either or thinking that it has to be one way or the other, that multiple truths cannot exist at the same time, then criticism of those in power or those with power is viewed as threatening and inappropriate or rude. Think about how that applies in the world, and think about how that applies in your individual life. New or challenging ideas are met with defensiveness, and that makes it difficult then to raise new and challenging ideas. And a lot of energy then gets spent on making sure that people's feelings aren't hurt and working around defensive people. And then the defensiveness of the people in power creates a culture that becomes oppressive, and it shuts down conversation and movement, and it shuts down the creative process. It shuts down being able to think creatively and come up with creative solutions to issues that we face. Fear, you can bring fear along on the creativity trip, but it doesn't get to be the cruise director. Defensiveness is a creativity killer, and it can ruin the whole trip. The creative process that we honor in ourselves, we have to honor in others. We're Unitarian Universalist, right? The inherent worth and dignity in all. So the antidote to defensiveness is shifting to a sense of openness, gentleness, curiosity, being able and willing to share our stories of pain in order to hear other perspectives too. If you haven't registered for Shift Happens, please do. Part of our creative process is to understand the link between defensiveness and fear, fear of losing power, losing face, losing comfort, losing privilege, of being exposed, of losing our position, of losing our power. But we can work on our own defensiveness. You know, that feeling that rises up that wants us to protect us and say something that isn't, say it isn't true. We can name defensiveness as a problem when it is one. Oh, I'm feeling defensive, we can say, even if we don't say it out loud. Sometimes this comes up in my marriage with my husband. Like, it happens for both of us, you know, just unintended. Bam, there it is, right? It's just right there. And so we have to say, oh, you know, I'm feeling defensive. What's that about? What do I feel like I need to protect? And then we can give people credit for being able to handle more than we think they can handle, because they can. And then we can dialogue and create a conversation in when we talk, where we talk about ways where defensiveness or resistance to new ideas gets in the way of our mission, our personal mission and our collective mission. This week, a friend of mine shared with me, he started a new job, and he realized that what he had carried over from his old job where he was for 5 years was this defensiveness that he started to feel every time he walked into a meeting, every time somebody came up to him for conversation. He would feel like he needed to kind of protect himself and, oh, here it comes, something that he was not doing well or that he needed to do more of or he had forgotten to do or something that I think his greatest fear was that they would ask him to do something else, to add yet another thing to his plate. So in this new job, he realized that when his supervisor would email him or call him or text him or whatever and say, hey, can we meet about this? He would start to feel that, you know, that ickiness inside where you think, oh, I've done something wrong. What have I done? What did I forget? What's she going to call me on the carpet about, right? And then they would get into the meeting and should say something like, yeah, I just wanted to process some ideas with you, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on how we should do this and on this meeting or on this workshop or on that training, and let's just brainstorm a little bit about and come up with some ideas about how that could go. She only wanted to participate in the creative process with him. She was offering an invitation. Perhaps she was longing for God and offering him a chance to be that with her. So he's aware that he's unlearning his defensiveness. He's learning to let his body relax and to trust. And what he mentioned several times was how much he had been able to be creative in his new work. What if we are divine creativity? What if we are the creative process? What if how we choose to live out our creativity really matters? What if our creative transformation matters not just for us as individuals, because, you know, inherent worth and dignity and the creativity of every person, right? That free and responsible search for truth and meaning. But once we grasp that for ourselves, doesn't it follow that we must naturally extend that out to all others? And our principles reflect that: justice, equity, compassion, and human relations. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. We live this creative process not alone, but in community, in covenant with each other, in this church, and also in covenant with all of life. This idea of the lone genius has outlived its truthfulness and its usefulness. There is no such thing. We're all bound up in each other's lives. We're all co-creators. Someone prepared meals for Monet, ironed Einstein's clothes, and loved Harriet Tubman. No one has done anything alone, not you or me or anyone in this room. Let us choose then to fully live in community and in covenant, in this creative process, as creative process, to expand our consciousness and understanding, to transform our own lives and the lives of others by our own care and creativity. May we be about the business of creating beauty in the world. May it be so. Blessed be, and amen.